an eglas bokor, in other words, a young heifer, right? Asher lo ubad bo. No work was ever done with this particular heifer, right? Asher lo moshcha biol. It never had a yoke put on it in order to, you know, to use it. The horido zikne yoyra, here's her egla and nachal esam. Then what they have to do? They have to take this heifer into a nachal esam, which he translates over here as a rough valley. But as I say, I mean, what exactly does it mean? So some say it means a very steep place or something.
Cliff.
Yeah. And asher le yoved bo velo yisareah. This valley is so bad for agricultural purposes that you cannot do any work within it, nor can it be sowed, right? The Yorfu Shomas Ha'egla Banochon, and over there, this is where they have to break the neck of this heifer. And then, of course, they have to say, you know, Yodin L'Shobas Ha'adama said that we did not shed this blood, Yodin Varu, we never saw, and so on. And forgive thy people Israel, right? Kapil Dam Pesel, and so on, Shepodis Ha'adashem. Okay, so what did it say about this place where they have to perform the execution or the you know, the sacrifice of the Eglah Rufa? The answer is it has to be in a Nachal Eson, Asher lo yehoved bo velo yisareah, right? They're not allowed to do any kind of work in it. So he says, why can't we say, right, that where did they do the plowing? Maybe they did the plowing, he says, in the Nachal Eson, right? Vasorasei Mehocho, right? And the warning of the Torah is as follows, Asher lo yovid bo velo yisareah, right? It has to be a place where they don't do it. So, in other words, if he plowed in that area over there, then in that case, he is violating another law in the Torah. So he should get Malkus, of course, for that, right? So this was his contribution to, why don't we add a little more Malkus to this guy? Now comes another one. Maskiflo Rav Chananya. So Rav Chananya comes along, he says, I can think of another violation, right? Namely, the Lech Shrev Dami, right? Why don't we consider also the fact, Ha Moichek Es Hashem B'Hadichosai, that maybe the name of God was written on, let's say, like a potsherd or something like that, which was there, you know, in the field, could be on a piece of papyrus or whatever, a sheepskin, whatever, but at any rate, the name of God was there, maybe written on a piece of wood, doesn't specify upon what it's written. But in the course of this plowing, his plow literally erases the divine name. Right? And we have a warning telling us not to violate this from this pasuk. It's written the Yibadetem Eshemom, that you have to wipe out the names of the Avodah Zorah, right, of the idols. Leisasun Kain, Radeshem Alekechem, but you're not allowed to do this to the Lord your God, right? Maskiflo Rababo, Rababo adds his comment, okay? He says, Belechshev Nami, hey, why don't we consider the following also? It says, Hakotzeit Es Behoraso. Right. Okay. This goes back to what we learned, and of course, in Parsha Tazria. Parsha Tazria, we learn primarily that Sedra deals with laws of leprosy, if you remember. Okay? And of course, they give different types of symptoms to describe when is it leprous and when is it not. Now, the point is that if a person has a sign that he might be a leper, he's not allowed to erase it, you know, to get rid of that sign. In this particular case, Behoris happens to be like a bright spot, okay? Not allowed to do it until, first of all, the Kain has a chance to take a look at it, and then the Kain doesn't immediately give him an opinion, you know, that it's okay. Instead, he has to wait a week, and then the Kohen comes back in a week and he examines it again and sees whether it was only a temporary spot or whether it really is leprous. And if he's in doubt, he again has to have him quarantined for another week,
And you know, if it persists, then you know the kohen has the right, you know, to pronounce him that he really is suffering permanently, you know, from leprosy and so on. In that case, of course, you know, he has to be the chusla machna outside the camp and so on. So the point over here is that if he has this spot of behoris, right, he's not allowed to, let's say, and he was holding the plow and he caught himself with it so that it obliterated this particular spot. So by obliterating this, he was guilty of another violation. Right. And what is the violation over there? So he says, the violation consists of as far as from this pasuk where it says Hishomer benega toras, you have to be careful literally with the affliction of leprosy. Now of course Hishomer by itself has within it, you know, not only the general idea of, you know, be careful not to do this or that, but also, you know, that the idea, keep it for the time being and so on, and don't obliterate it, you see. Maskevla Abaye also has another suggestion. He says, well, Ekoshev Nami, why don't we include also HaMeziach HaKoshen Me'al HaOifod VeHameze Bari Ora. All right? Says, I can think of two other things that he might be guilty of violating. First of all, let's say he was a Kohen Gadol. Don't ask me what he's doing, plowing over here in this field or anything like that, but let's say he was the Kohen Gadol. I mean, maybe he liked to do his lawn too sometimes, you know. So, in that case, the Kohen Gadol has to wear the choshen. In other words, the breastplate, you know, which contains the precious stones and so on and so forth, on his breast, you know, he has to wear it. Okay? And it's written in the Torah, Lo Yizach HaChoshen Me'al HaEphod. And the choshen is never to be removed from the ephod. So he went, they took the plow, and he started in, and he knocked it off somehow. So it became disconnected, okay? So he is a Kohen Gadol, you know, is violating it. So that's another possibility, he says. Not only that, but there's another possibility, according to Abaye, namely Hameisim Badi. All right, maybe, you know, in order to make a yoke for the behemoth, which to plow, you know, to tie them together, what did he use? He used the poles, the staves, as they say, of the Aron. Remember, you know, that they had staves that were permanently attached over there with rings and so on, so that the Levium could carry it, okay? And it's written also, you know, that they're not allowed to remove them. It's not to be removed. It has to remain there permanently, right? And he did, and he took the staves from the Aron, and they used it in order to create, you know, the... you know what you need in order to guide the animal, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The halter, or whatever it was, okay? So, then he would be guilty also for that particular violation, right? That's for a same hocha, and what the, where does the Torah prohibit these? So it says, first of all, in both of these cases, it says, lo yosuru. In other words, this particular, you know, it's written in the connection with the badim, with the staves of the Oren, that they are not ever to be
removed.
Apart, removed, you know, from the Oren, and also below Yisach HaKoshen. Matzkif lo Ravashi. So Ravashi adds his opinion. What else he could possibly be guilty of? He says, well, Koshev Nami, why don't we think likewise that what? HaKoresh Be'atze Asherah. It says, maybe he was plowing and, you know, he used the wood for the yoke from where? Matze Asherah. Right? He took it from the groves of idolatry. As we said before, you know, in connection with you know, the bishul and yontiv and so on, that's the same thing, right? That nothing is to cling to you from that which is prohibited to you. Matskiplo Ravino, Ravina says, yeah, I can think of another thing, but Echoshev Name, he says, Koitzeitz Ilonois Toivets. Maybe in order to make the yoke
with which he guides the animals, he took fruit trees that were producing fruit, and he chopped them and he made it. Because there is, Vasora say, there's a prohibition against that, mehochem from that. Because it's written, ki mimenu sochel, the yosek loy sichrois. Concerning trees that bear good fruit, it says that you are to eat from it, but you're not allowed to cut it down. Of course, if it stops producing fruit, then you're permitted to cut it. I mean, we had a case in our backyard. We had a plum tree all along, but the plums came so diseased and so on and stuff. So eventually we had to take it down.
Cut it down?
Yeah, we had to cut it down because it was diseased. It wasn't producing fruit and it was diseased. So that would be permissible. But otherwise, as long as it produces good fruit, you're not allowed to cut down a plum tree or an apple tree or whatever you wish. You know. And so this guy came along then, and he took a good tree which was producing luscious fruits, and he cut it down in order to make the yoke. So he's guilty of violation of that too. Omar Rabbi Zeir, the Rabbi Mani. So Rabbi said to Rabbi Mani, he says, "Well, kosher nami, hey, I have another idea." He says, "Kingon de Omar, Shavua Shalayekwesh Biyontav." Let's say that the guy said, "I take an oath that I will not plow on Yontav." So you'd say, it's a good idea, isn't it? He's taking an oath not to plow on Yontav.
It's an unnecessary oath.
Yes, unnecessary, right. Because it says, how could he make such an oath when this oath is not a viable oath? This is not the kind of a situation upon which an oath can take effect. Why not? Because Mushba v'yomei mahar Sinai hu. If the Torah tells you not to do something, then it's as if the Torah itself enjoined by oath upon you at Mount Sinai. So you cannot take an oath, which the Torah has already proclaimed, right? It's already designated. So in that case, obviously you can't say, "I take an oath not to do it," because the Torah says you're not allowed to cook to plow on Yom Tov, right? You can't do it on Shabbos, you can't do it on Yom Tov. It's Bechorish Vakotir, okay? So Amalei, so he said, let me change the wording a little bit. Okay, he says, Kigon, for example, the Omar, he said, Shavua Shalo Echroish Bein Bachol Bein Yom Tov. He says, "I take an oath that I will not plow either on a weekday or on a Yom Tov. The Migo, the Chol Alei Shavua Bachol, inasmuch as this oath becomes effective on a weekday, so chalalai nami biyontav. In that case, it also is effective on yontav." So that's the way he would get around to it. Midi de ise she'elo. So now they say something which is subject to going to a rav, going to a Beis Din and inquiring as to whether it's valid or not valid what you did. So, like a Tony, it's not what we're dealing with over here. The point is, in other words, that this is unnecessary, because if, he would go to the Beis Din or to the Rav would immediately tell him, "Look, you can't take an oath like that." Below, so they say, "What do you mean? You can't?" Vahare hektesh bivachor. Isn't there, for example, maybe you have a bechor, and of course, remember what I said before. The bechor has a status of being holy right from birth, okay? Of course, we're not talking about bechor Adam, we're talking about bechor behemo, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sanctity do this bechor, and what does the Torah say about the bechor? It says, "Lo sa'avod b'chor shorecha, right? You're not allowed to do any kind of a labor at all with the firstborn of your ox, right? V'lo so goes b'chor tzonecha, nor you're permitted to shear the firstborn of the sheep. Not allowed to do that. And we already had learned before in connection with b'choros that the law of b'chor is that if they have no blemish whatever, then of course in olden times what happened to them? They were eaten by the Kohanim. Well, they were given to the Kohen in Beis HaMikdash, and the Kohen ate them. It's kochim kalim. Okay, if it developed a mum, and we determined that this is a mum kavua, not a mum over, in other words it's a permanent blemish and not just a temporary blemish,
to the dogs,
then in that particular case it's not allowed to feed it to the dogs.
No.
What do you have to do with it? The answer is it can be eaten. It can be eaten. I mean, I'm not talking about it as a trait.
A mum
would be an external mum we're talking about. I mean, let's say that
a sore
that never healed or something like that, or it was cross-eyed or something like that, you know. It's only strapping, but even animals can get cross-eyed, I guess.
Cut his head off.
I mean, there's Gemara and Becheres, I mean, which discuss all kinds of different things, you know, that would be considered, you know, mumming. And so cross-eyed, there was a question about that, but it seems that in general a cross-eyed behemoth is considered a mumming. After all, it should be perfect, you know, in order to be sanctified. Okay. But the law that we said a moment ago, that you're not allowed to do any labor with it, or to shear it, or anything like that, that still applies even if it develops the mum. All that you can do with it if it develops the mum is to shecht it and to eat it. Okay? It's the only thing you can do.
Well, you gotta remove the mum.
Right. So, what did this guy do? He went and he used a bechor which was hektish, in other words, it was a bechor which was unblemished and therefore belonged to the sanctuary, literally, right? And what did he do with it? He used it in order to plow with, right? So if he did some kind of monkey business like that, he deserves it again. He deserves malchus because he did another action. Okay. Now they bring another case. He says, "Varei nozir." Look, remember we said before, among the things that he was a kohen, he was a nozir, and he went into Beis HaTumo, you know, he went into a cemetery and where there were bodies around and things like that and so on. And of course, both the nozir and the kohen, you know, cannot defile themselves, we said. So he says, well, right, nozir, isn't this a violation? So you say, look, that we already discussed before, so what are you adding over here? So he said, I'll tell you what I'm adding. I'm adding a different type of benozir. What kind of benozir? It says, benozir shimshon. So what is benozir shimshon? Benozir shimshon is a nozir after what we read in the Torah about Samson. What do we read about Samson? Well, first of all, we read that in the case of Samson, right even before he was born, his mother and father were already told, you know, that he would be born and he had to be, he was to be a nozir, right? So, what does this nazirus consist of? His nazirus consists of the fact, you know, that he had to let his hair grow long. I mean, as we know the famous story, okay? But, whereas the ordinary nozir was not allowed to defile himself to Mason, Samson certainly had plenty of blood shedding on his career. So in other words, what it shows that if he's a nozir shimshon, then in that particular case, this prohibition of defiling himself to the dead, this would not apply. So that's the objection to adding this to the list. Okay, it says nozir shimshon bart mi lemeisim. This is not in the category of not to be metame to the dead. Elohai Tana Isur Kole Lesle. But this particular Tana says he does not have an all-inclusive prohibition. In other words, prohibitions have to be spelled out one by one by one by one by one. So that's why they're adding all these things. However, we get back to, all right, let's finish this, and then one last word about this. Omer Rav Hashir, so Rabbi Hoshea says, Hamarbia Shor Psule Mukdoshim Lokishtai. He says, if you take an ox which belongs to the category of Psule Hamukdoshim. Now, what is Psule Hamukdoshim? An animal was designated for a sacrifice, okay? It's somewhat similar to the business of the Bechor that I spoke about a few moments ago. An animal was, except that this is not a firstborn animal, okay, but it was an animal that was designated that it is to be a sacrifice, okay? And then this animal developed a blemish, okay? So obviously, an animal which develops a blemish cannot be used for a sacrifice. So the question is, what can you do with such an animal? So one of the solutions as to what to do with the animal is that the Hekdesh, in other words, the temple treasury, comes and it sells it to somebody, and once that person gives a donation to the Beis HaMikdash for the value of the animal, so in that particular case, the animal is Yotze L'Chutn. It now becomes non-sacred, okay? It's non-sanctified. But nevertheless, it still retains some of the Kedusha. What is the Kedusha that it retains? It's not allowed to work it or use it for anything else, okay? So this is his suggestion, that maybe, he says, if a person takes this ox and uses it for propagation, right, makes an eligible cow, okay? And he uses it in order to propagate, okay? And this animal, this shor, is Psule Mukdoshim. He's using it for a profane purpose, whereas we said, all that he could do with it after he has redeemed it from the temple treasury is just to shecht it and eat it. He's not allowed to do anything else because it still retains a certain sacredness about it, right? So Lokesh Dayim, according to Rabbi Ishaya, deserves two sets of malkas, because he's actually, you know, he has violated two different prohibitions. So Omar Rabbi Yitzchok said, Hamanig Bishop Sulem Mikdoshim Loke. He says if a person uses it to pull the animal, in other words, it could be for agricultural purposes, right? The previous case we said that it's Marbia, in other words, he's using it for propagation, right? Now, and what if he is manig? In other words, he's using it in order to do some labor with it. So also he deserves malchus. Sharei guf echod hu, v'aso ha'kosev kishtegu, because it is literally like one body. In other words, it is one prohibited animal, but what he's doing with it is actually, it's as if he's violating two prohibitions. What is the two prohibitions? It's sort of like it becomes an animal of kilayim, because it is both kosher for eating, but not kosher for any other purpose, whether it's propagation or labor. Okay, so that therefore, that's why he would deserve two sets of malchus. All right, my last word on this is obviously there's ein ladova sof. I mean, you could find all kinds of other prohibitions if you look for it. But it comes back to the basic fact that in the final analysis, we're really dealing with something theoretical. That, one action is going to bring eight, and then we also said, so why can't we say that there are more prohibitions and so on? Now, if you remember, one of the statements that they said before in the previous page is that it's Tana V'Shiur. What is Tana V'Shiur? In other words, he mentions this, but he left out a lot of other things that he could have mentioned. So in other words, when he said eight up above over here, but V'Shiur, there are a lot of other things that he could have added and he didn't bother with. So all these suggestions belong in the category of Tana V'Shiur.
But it's all in the realm of the areas we can see, but it's interesting to see, you know, how each one comes up with a different proposal for a violation. Yeah.
Right. Why didn't they just put somebody
quickly
on the field and do low tier stuff? Or why didn't they do, if they were, why did they have to make him into a leper? Why couldn't they just do low tier stuff?
Right, right, right.
Lie down in front and cut his hair.
All
spies, you know, they really go
to
far-fetched things.
It's correct.
My
correct.
Fingers and so on.
Yeah, right. So, listen, they like to play around with these ideas, too. And as I said last week,
mental stimulation.
Right. I mean, there's drosh for kabbalah's
heart. We know stolen's true.
Think it through and receive reward for the thinking it through. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem, we will meet next week again. It will be the Wednesday before Rosh Hashanah, as we see, we'll start from the Mishnah at the bottom of the page over here, where we actually get into how many sets of Malkus. Not sets of Malkus, but what is one set of Malkus consist of?
What is it?
And, right. What is it really? How is it done? And, what are the medical reasons for not giving the 40, in other words, the 39 and so on?
How long the last should be and so on.
Eventually they'll get also, what is it made of? Yeah,
made of.
That's correct.
No, I didn't record that great.
You're going to miss it.
We're now on top of A's.
There's a Gemara, that says that afilu sichas chulin shel tamidei chachamin smicho talmud or smicho limud, which means that even the so to speak the devachadeke conversation of a talmud chacham requires learning.
Right.
Because we can learn even from ordinary things that we
right.
Do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Alright, so now we are ready for the Mishnah at the bottom of page Chav Beis. I take a look and we're almost finished with the Gemara,
uh-huh.
At this rate, in another few weeks, the deficit will make a see him.
Okay.
So,
we'll plan on it.
Started to plan upon. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Mishnah wants to know now the practicality of Malkus. It says, Kama Malkin, I say. How many stripes, how many strokes?
Lashes,
right? Does he get? So the answer that they give is Arboyim Choser Achaz. Literally, 40 minus 1. Of course, adds up to what? To 39. Okay. But the question is, how do they get the number?
How do they get 40,
how do they get? 40, you take your shibbet.
Oh,
yeah. Take yeshivin, absolutely. Take a look at the text of the Torah.
Deuteronomy 2:25.
Yeah, it's the end of Parsha Kisetze. I don't go by the chapters, I go by. Okay.
That's what it says.
Okay. Okay. Torah says at the beginning of chapter Chof Hei, says Tiyeh Riv Bein Anoshim, right? If there will be a quarrel between people, Benik Shuel Amishpat, and they approach the court, Ushfatum, and judgment is rendered. Then the Gemara says, the Torah says, V'hitzdiku es tzaddik, they shall declare the one who is righteous, righteous. V'hirshu es harasha, and they shall declare that the one who is a rasha, a rasha. This is literally. Of course, the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses this, in order to derive all kinds of halachas, concerning about how the judges have to judge a court, and also about the general idea, that for example, while we have a rule concerning majority rule, but in capital cases majority rule by itself is no good. If, for example, in the court of 23, which was the court that would normally deal with capital cases, if you had 12 and 11 to convict,
then in that particular case, we say that it's no good. You have to continue with the discussion until you come to a conclusion. On the other hand, what would happen if 12 said that he should be free, he's Zakai, and 11 said that he's guilty? In that case, immediately he is free, you see. So it's based upon the fact, that it's Tikkun as a Tzaddik, that if he is right, then in that case you have to proclaim it, you have to confirm it by applying this rule, majority rule, and so on. But Yeshua is a Russia, that already requires a greater majority. And there are other things too that they derive from it. And then the next pasuk says, "V'hoya," and it shall come to pass, "im bin hakos harosha," which means literally, if he is a son who deserves shmeisen, right? Because he is wicked. In other words, if the man deserves malchus as his punishment, then it's written, "V'hi pilo hashofet," the judge has to cause him literally to fall down. We'll see how the Gemara interprets that. Tell you right now, the Gemara is going to interpret in the sense that it forces him to bend over. He has to bend over, okay? V'hi kochu lepanov, and then has to, smite him in his presence. How we'll take that, we'll understand too how the Gemara interprets that. Kedei rishoso, right? In accordance with what his wickedness is, b'mispor, according to the number or by number. And then the next pasuk says, "Arboyim yakenu lo yosef." 40 stripes he may give him, he shall not exceed. Why? Pen yosef lahakoso aleila makor rabo, because if he should exceed it, and he should beat him more than this, with many stripes, then the niklo ochicho lienecho. Then, in that particular case, we are going to find that your brother will be dishonored in your own eyes. Now, what does it mean, will be dishonored in your own eyes? Basic idea over here is that he deserves to be shamed, but at the same time, the net result should be that he still remains what? Ochicho. He still remains your brother. He's still a fellow Jew, and having accepted his punishment, don't ostracize him, don't throw him out, but accept him again as we saw to good graces.
He's taken his punishment.
Right, he's taken his punishment, okay? But look, one pasuk, right, ended with the word b'mispar, by number, and the next pasuk begins with the word arboyim, arboyim yakin, right? So you ask me, how do we know 40? So the answer is because the pasuk says 40.
Right.
But the question is, but how do we know that it's 39 and not 40? This is the question. See, this is what they're going to discuss. So that therefore, this is what the Mishnah now says. It says, Shenemar, it's written, b'mispor, arboim. In other words, by number 40, it says, minyan, he should be given a number of stripes, a number of makis, right? Shehu samuch le'arboim, which is literally close to 40. What is close to 40? The answer is 39. So they derive that from that. However, the only thing is that we have over here is that there are many who question the word samuch over here. Not because it doesn't make sense, but because this is not what we find in various texts. As for example, the Gemara is going to use the word sochem. Not only will the Gemara take a look at the right side and the little margin of it, see? Okay? It says, Halecha Mishneh, right, Pesh Paragin Zami, Hilchit Sanhedrin, Kosa Poshut, U Shazer Tos, right?
Too small for me.
Too small, okay. Get your magnifying glass. Okay. It says, Halecha Mishneh, which happens to be, of course, a commentary upon the Rambam, okay? Mm-hmm. He says, there's no question over here that the word somuch is a mistake. Shazeotos, right? But tzorech liyos, what we should read is the word sochem, esohar boyim. Dechein oma b'gemara, because first of all, this is the reading that we find in the discussion of Gemara on the next side of the page over there. Dechein mashma mevoah, beferish Rashi. And likewise, when we take a look at Rashi's commentary, we'll see that he also understands it as sochem. Okay? The chain, the samag, and the samag also. I don't know if you ever heard of the samag and the samak. The samag is sefer mitzvahs gadol. You know, at the time, you know, when they began to compile the codes of Jewish law, so the samag was one of the earliest compilations of law. We know others, you know, that I mean the Rambam, of course, and then we also are familiar with the, you know, the Tur, which came a generation or two after the Rambam by Rabbi Yaakov Alaturim, happens to be a grandson of Rashi. He was the composer of the Tur, and then the Shulchan Aruch came originally as started out as a commentary on the Tur, and then he used the structure of the Tur in order to write what we call the Shulchan Aruch today, and then of course commentaries and additions, etc., have come to that. But as we see that in all these places it says that the Samag too had the Yor Loshen HaMishnah as what? Sochem Esvaboy Ad Kan L'Sheni. Okay, and then he quotes others who also the same thing. Okay, and yeah, so let's read the rest of this a little bit on the side over there. It says, okay, the Gam Horan B'Seif B'Seches Zu, at the end of this one Seches, right, Kosav B'Feirush HaMishnah, he wrote in the commentary to the Mishnah, he says, Minyan, what is Minyan? He says, Hasoichem. And he says, what is Targum V'Sochen Levenim? In other words, if we take a look at the Unkelus Aramaic translation of where it says in Sefer Shmos, Sochen Levenim, remember that where the reference is? It's a reference to the people of Israel, they were acquired by Pharaoh,
To make bricks,
right? And it says, "V'sochem levenim," no, right? Lo sigra'u. You have to give the same amount, even though you have to go looking for your own straw and everything else as it was before. So, how is the translation of tochen levenim, which means number, in this particular context, right? So the answer is sechum. That's the Aramaic translation. So sechum, as a matter of fact, in Hebrew we still use to this day. It became a good Hebrew word. And it means the sum total, sechum. Okay? So, therefore, if we read it sechum. All right, so the question is, sochem is harboim, so what is the interpretation? The answer is, this is a number which would, if we add up, then the next number is number 40. So as you can see, whether you try it this way or try it the other way, but in any case, the idea being, and we'll take a look at the Rashi now and see what he has to say. And we'll see why they come to that conclusion. At least we'll try to see why they come to that conclusion. Okay?
Okay,
so Atznisan in the Rashi, I'm reading right now. Okay, it says, Shanema, it's written, the Mispar Boy, right? It says, Vahipilo HaShafet, right? That, as we read before from the Torah, that the judge causes him to fall down literally or bend over, right? The Kohun Lefonov, Kedei Rishason, he has to beat him. And we'll see how they translate the word Lefonov afterwards. Kedei Rishason, in accordance, you know, with the wickedness that he has performed, B'mispor, by number. V'somochlei, and then right after that comes Arboyim Yaken. Right? So that therefore, by virtue of the fact that first comes the word mispor, which means number, and you know what the number is? It's arboyim, but it means that it's a number which is close to arboyim, but not yet
arboyim.
V'darshinan, and we make a drash, k'man dechsiv, the mispor arboyim, right? Minyan, in other words, it is a number, shehu soichim es arboyim, which added would make 40. In other words, 39. Right. Umid the law kasiv yakenu arboyim b'mispor. And inasmuch is not written in the Torah, arboyim b'mispor, that is yakenu arboyim b'mispor, that he should, you know, hit him, he should smite him. 40 in number, so that would have already implied what? It has to get 40 actual strokes. Elo b'mispar aboyim yakenu. So shaminim, from this we learn the ochiko omar minyan hasochem ho aboyim, right? In other words, cheshbon hamashlim schum shel aboyim. In other words, a figure which, if we would add to it, then it would complete the number 40. Shegoreim nikros acharov aboyim, the ainu shloshim teshan. A number which, in other words, causes that the next number that you're going to count after it would be 40. In other words, how much is it then? Wind up with 39. Okay. It's a little bit adrei, I have to tell you. There's no question about it. Of course, it's a little bit of adrei.
I think that probably they don't want, since they said not to exceed 40, they want to make sure that they don't exceed
that. They don't even get the 40. That's correct. There's a good deal of justification for feeling that this is so. Yeah. The idea of Arboim Choser Achas became applied not only to this, but also became applied to the number of malachas, to what we call the Ovis Malacha on Shabbos, right? What are the principal numbers? So the answer is, it's again, it's, we call them the Lamed Tes Malachas, in other words, the 39 malachas. Or you could say it's Arboim Choser Achas, right? That there are 40 minus 1 principles of different types of malachas on Shabbos. Okay, so getting back to the rest of the Mishnah. So far as we see, Chachomim say what? He gets 39. But along comes Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Arboim Shleimos Huloike. He gets 40 whole strokes. He deserves 40 complete strokes. Okay. So, and in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, so the question is, what are we going to do? Where does he get number 40? The Heichon Huloike is Hayseira. Where should he get the additional stroke? Because everybody's in agreement about what number?
39.
Everybody's in agreement with 39. Now, how the 39 is to be applied, we'll see in a few moments. Because, you know, we've already said, I've mentioned at other times, that it's a number that has to be divisible by 3. All right, but 39 is divisible by 3. But what are you going to do with 40? 40 is not divisible by 3. So that, therefore, we say, okay, number 40, he gets bank safe up. In other words, he gets it literally between his shoulders, okay? Gets it over there. Okay, then they say ein umdino so ele b'makos horiz lishtalish. See, the Mishnah now says that you're not allowed to estimate the number of makos he's going to get except with an amount that can be divided by 3.
What is the reason for the division by 3?
Well, we'll see. Basically, it's because of the fact that they're going to say that one third of the strokes he gets in the front of his body, and two thirds he gets on the back. So presumably it's first on the back,
so
then on the front,
the
and back again. So that's
okay.
The reason why they want it that way. Okay. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda. So the question is, if he got it back and front and back, so where are you going to put the other ones? They say, okay, put it over here on top, sort of between the shoulders or something. All right, but of course we don't adopt Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So somebody is lucky at least, he doesn't get all more than 39 for one set. All right, now the Mishnah continues now and it says, Omedu lekabel arboyim. All right, let's say that they said that he deserves the 40 makos. Of course, when they say the 40, they mean over here the 39. Because after all, this represents the view of the Chachamim, right? So let's say that they estimated that he is capable physically of, getting a set of, a full set of makos. The Leika Mixas. And then they started in to give him makos. He got some of them. The umdu, and then they estimated, they saw a shvach, a chalish, or something like that. So they estimated, they determined that shein yochel lekabel arboim, that he cannot get a full set of 40 makos, right? Then in that case, potter. Then in that particular case, whatever he has already endured, he's free from the rest of the others. In other words, let's say that they gave him only 3, or that they gave him 6, or 9, or 18, or something like that. And, the physician who stands over there with the cart says, this man can't take anymore. Then in that case, even though he deserved 40, but we say, Shengenuk, and he's not going to get any more. All right. What would happen in a different case? Let's say they determined that this man was capable of only receiving 18 strokes. That's it. Mishaloka, and then after he got these 18 strokes, Omru, hey, they determined Sheyachal Hula Kabil Arboim, that he's strong enough actually that he could get 40. Potter, you don't give him the rest. It's enough. You said 18, stop at 18. That's it. Okay, even though he's physically capable of getting more. All right, let's finish the Rashi first of all. David Meyer. Hi, baby. I'm a schwer over there. I'll have to give you markers if you don't behave yourself.
Okay. He was listening with his eyes closed.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely. It's concentrating, right? Like we sometimes listen to music. Something like that, right?
Right.
Reuyas lehishtalish, right? The last two words over there, it says, Begamora meforish. Gemara will explain what they mean by that.
Thank
you, Rashi.
pass the buck.
All right. The Yomdu, Shein Yochel Kabil, and they determined, you know, after they started to give him Shmeisen, that they see that he can't really take more than whatever he's got. So the Kabun, this matzah, this is the idea. Inasmuch he has already been disgraced, the Besdin, by, you know, in the eyes of the Besdin, by virtue of the fact that he's already gotten whatever he got, what the locker, Tzas, he's already received a certain amount of Malkus, it's already enough, you know, to make him feel debased, right? So, Sagi Lei Behochin, it's enough for him with this. But let's take a different case now, says Rashi. Let's say he did not get the Malkus. Okay? Malkus yet. Okay? Elam duhle arboim, right? But rather, you know, they determined, you know, that he's capable of 40. And then they again determined she'ein yochol lekabel kulam. They determined that he cannot get all of them. Lo mipoter. Then in that case, he's not free from the fact that he's going to have to face the punishment of Malkos. Why? De'ein rashayin legroa ha'omed, right? Because they are not permitted to reduce the estimate. Once they determine that he is capable of getting 40 markers, as long as he didn't get the markers yet, so eloloike achazman, but rather at some future time, this is when he's going to be punished with markers. Okinami, so here too, im umduhu lishmun asar, if they determine that he can only take 18, umishaloka, and after he got them, chosu viyomdu sheyochul adayin lekabila boyim. You know, they determined that, hey, he really can get 40, is potter. He doesn't get it. Why? Mishum de loka, because he has already suffered the malchus. Avol lo loka, but let's say he did not suffer malchus yet, they didn't give him the punishment as yet, then in that case, Rashoin la osif al omid vishon, then they are entitled, if they want to add to the number of the original estimate. In other words, while they said that he can do 18, but he didn't get anything yet, and they see that he's capable of getting more, then in that particular case, right, they can increase it up to, you know, the full set. Okay.
39.
Yeah. So now the Gemara has a very interesting statement. Okay? Says, my Tom, what is the reason? All right, so actually, first of all, it starts by saying the same thing that, more or less, that we saw in the Rashi, because Rashi was only looking ahead. And he's telling us, it says, my Talmud, what is the reason? It says, Iksiv arboim b'mispar, right, if it were written 40 in number, then Hava Amina would have said, arboim b'minyon. In other words, the number has to be 40. Kashta, but now the Siv, it is written b'mispar by number, arboim, 40, so minyon, shehu soichem esu arboim, in other words, a count which means that, you know, if you give another one, it would make exactly 40.
Right.
So, in that particular case, that tells us that what? That he only gets 39. Omar Rava. So Rava said the following. Says, Kama tipshai shor inshe. Says, what fools some of these people be. In what sense? The kaime mekame sefer Torah. When the Sefer Torah goes by, they stand up, they rise in front of it. But below Kayame Mekama Gavra Rabba, but they do not rise in the presence of a great personality, great personage, a great Talmud Chacham. They show respect to the Sefer Torah, right? But they don't respect the people who actually are learning Torah, who teach Torah, and who can come up, you know, with the ideas that the Torah is trying to tell us. The Ilu, because it says, look, it says, Sefer Torah, in the Torah itself, Ksiv, it is written, what? Arboim, right? 40. The Osu Rabbonon, and the rabbis came, and Botzrulu Chado, and they took out one. They reduced it by one. So, if the rabbis are so capable of interpreting the Sefer Torah, then you have to have respect for the rabbis and show them the respect. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Arboim Shlemos. Rabbi Yehuda, of course, says, give him 40. Complete. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yehuda says, my Talmud Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason? So he says, Dichsev, there's a Pasuk. What is the Pasuk? Pasuk happens to come from the 13th chapter in the book of Zechariah. And it's, I have to tell you, if you go to that part of Zechariah, it's a little bit unusual what Zechariah is talking about. What he's saying, he's talking about over there in chapter 13, happens to be about Nevi'im, who are Nevi'i Sheker. They are false prophets, and they claim to be speaking the word of God, but in reality they're not speaking the word of God. Okay? So he says over there, says, they'll come to this person and they say to him, Maha Makos or Eila Ben Yodecha, what are these Makos or Malkos, if you wish, right? In other words, you know, that we see them, that you were whipped, you know, you were beaten, right? Literally between your hands, in other words, that you have, you know, on your body and so on. Why did you get Malkos? Right? Mm-hmm. So, you know what his answer is? He says, we Omar, and he says, that is, he will answer, Asher hu kesi beis ma'ahavai. Because I was beaten in the home of those who love me. Look at the original text again in Zechariah, and see that he says, it's my mother and my father, those who love me, who gave me this beating. Okay? Now, obviously, if it is Beis Mahavai in the home of those who love me, then we have to say, why was he given Malkus? The answer is, he was given Malkus because they love him and they feel, you know, that they have to put him on the right path, right? That they have to correct his behavior. Okay? And since it says over there in Sadonik Ben Yodecho, so this is the justification that Rabbi Yehuda has for saying that the 40th stroke is given over here. Okay? However, the rabbis were not happy with that interpretation of the pasuk, because, you know, as in many cases, the same pasuk can be given a different application, a different interpretation. So he says, the Rabbonim, how did the rabbis interpret that particular pasuk in Zechariah? He says, Ahu, that pasuk they interpret, betinoko shebeis rabban, who dichsev. They say that this applies to the kids who learn in the cheder. In other words, if they don't behave, they don't learn well, then they're entitled to get, you know, they're entitled to get Malkus, right? Because it is based Mahabai. It's in the home of those who love them. In other words, so the idea that it is not, you know, to be cruel to them, but the idea is, you know, to get them to go on the right path. Or as Shlomo HaMelech said, of course, in you know, he said all kinds of things. But you say for Mishnah, right? Says, Yaseh bincho, right? V'yahadecha, it says, chastise your child and he will love you. In other words, a child requires chastisement, he requires discipline. He requires a parent who'll tell him what's right and what's wrong, and insist, you know, that the child conform to standards, you see.
Psychological.
Right.
course, he also said Chanoch Hadar Manar Al Pidarko. In other words, when you educate, when you train your child, you have to do it in accordance with his ability, with his own natural,
understand
sort of what he can do, what he's capable of doing, and so on and so forth. Right? So that's why I say. I mean, he said lots of things, right? But you could find, justification. Look, if we go back to the Torah, we find, for example, in the beginning of Parsha Eket, it's written over there that God caused the people of Israel, right? Ka'asher ye'aser ish es b'no, that even as a person will chastise his child, right? Arishem alekech yasreka. So does the Lord your God also chastise you. In other words, the Rebbeinu Shalom wants us to understand the discipline of his commandments and live in accordance with what he has asked us to do. You see. So there's something to say for that, I guess.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you're allowed to beat a kid and make him senseless or anything like that. That definitely
does him.
Right. Yes.
You give him Malchus.
Yeah. No, not at all. He brought it only for the idea that Shehu Kesi based Mahabai, that Ben Yodai, right? In other words, it was Marcus that he got on the, so that this is the justification he gave. But no, there's no mention of 40 over there, okay? All right, so it's a little far-fetched. Mela, that's why the Rabbanan disagreed. They gave a different interpretation, right? Instead of applying it, to the Russians getting the Malkus, they applied it instead, to a child that he needs discipline. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right, move on.
Yeah. Ain't om din elibim Malkus or is lehishtalish, right? In other words, the number that they estimate that he can get in Malkus is a number that can be divided by 3. Okay?
Right.
And then they say, loko in, lo loko lo. In other words, if he had already received Marcus, and they say that he cannot get any more than that, then in that case, yes. In other words, he's Potter, right? He doesn't get any more. But lo loko, he didn't get any Marcus whatever yet, then lo. Then that's not going to work. In other words, they're entitled to do what? To put it off for another day, and then they give it to him when they feel that he's capable of it. So to this, there's an objection. Raminu. So they ask Akash about this. They say, "Umduhu lekabel arboyim." If they estimated that he can get 40 markets, in other words, the full set of 39, the chaz will be umdu, and then they again estimated shein yochul lekabel arboyim, right? That he cannot get a full set of markets, so potter, right? Now, umduhu lekabel shmona esrei, if they estimated that he can receive 18, v'chazru v'amduhu sheyachol lekabel arboyim, but then, they estimated afterwards that he's actually capable of getting 40, so it's potter. He's not going to get anything beyond the 18, right? So there seems to be a contradiction. So the answer is, Amarab Shesh is like Kasha. He said, nah, no Kasha, he says. In other words, if it is the very same day, right, then in that case, if it's only the lower number and he got the makas, then in that particular case, that's it, he's potter. But if they estimate a higher number, but they put it off for the following day or for some later day or something like that, then in that case, they figure that he will be capable of getting the higher number.
Until proven otherwise.
Right. Okay, let's take a look. Ooh, big Rashi over here.
All right.
Okay, Gemara. Kama tipshay sharinche, right? How foolish are other people? It says, Kama shaitim halolu ro b'nei yodim. It says, how foolish are the majority of human beings. It reminds me, what does Shakespeare say?
No,
I'm thinking about Puck. What did he say about Puck? How foolish these mortals be? Right?
Yeah. I mean, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Midsummer Night's Dream, right. Yeah. So it's a somewhat similar idea. Okay. But of course, the reason being, not because of the foolishness that we find in the Midsummer Night's Dream over there, but because of the fact that you rise for a symbol, but you don't rise for the person who's actually living the symbol. You see, this is the point. Okay. Raminhu. All right, so now, of course, the Rashi discussed the last thing that we had, all right? That the objection was, Umduh lekabil arboyim, right? They estimated that he can... On the fourth line,
yeah.
On top, okay? Yeah. They estimated that he could get a set of arboyim, of 39, because we were Yomdu, and then they again determined Shein Yochel, right? So, potu nosel. Afal gav delei loka. Now, this reading would seem to indicate that even though he did not yet get any malchus, but if they determined that should get a lower number, then in that case, that's it. He's free, according to this interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Almo, if that's the case, the leishoni ben loka the leiloka. And in that case, we would say that it wouldn't make any difference whether he got malchus or he didn't get malchus yet. Lochinami, and likewise over here, ben sham duhu l'arboyim, ben sham duhu l'shmon esrei, right? Whether they determine that he gets 40 or 18, lo yadin le elo omid rishon. We should only carry out the first estimate. In other words, if they said 40, then he should get 40, but if it's 18, he should only get 18. The kasha, he says, beim reisha, beim sefer. And there's too much of a difficulty in understanding it this way. Whether we look at the beginning of the Mishnah or the latter part of the Mishnah makes no difference. So, therefore, we come up with, what Rav Chisa said over there, or Rav Sheshes, rather. He says, right? So if it is for its own very day, our Mishnah is talking about if they estimated on the very same day, right? So the Hilkal, therefore, so if they, that very same day, they estimated that he cannot withstand it, or Yochol, or he is capable of doing, in other words, to change the mind. So, Iglai Milsa, then this would reveal the fact that the Omid Shalahem Lo Hayoklum, that the first estimate wasn't worth anything. It's a rather strong indictment, right? Kaven the Bo Bayom, because on that very same day, Sosru Komasha Omdu, they contradicted everything that they had already determined. Sharei ze lo nishtano v'lo hichikish b'shehus mu'ad. Because in this particular case, it makes no difference. There's no literally denial over here, even for a slight moment. The yesh loma, so that therefore, he says, I have to come up with a different idea. He says, the heim ta'u ba'omen, that they made a mistake, taka, in their estimate. So Hilkoch, if that's the case, ki omdu techilo liarboyim. If at first they said he could get 40, again, read 39, right? The chosru viomdu bo bayom, and then the very same day they determined shein yochol akabil. So imlo ko mitzosam. So this is where we come up with our solution, right? That if he had received some of the malchus already, then potronoso, right? They free him from the rest. Shaharein is bottom, because he has already been disgraced by virtue of the malchus that he has already had. V'yim lo'ilokot. But if he didn't, then hareihu k'mishalim duhu klal, then he would be like in the category of one who they didn't even estimate as to how much he is capable of getting. V'achshavhu and it's only now, in other words, at the later moment, that they're going to take a look again at his case, right? And then see how much he's capable of doing. The Omru, and they said, Ein Yochol, that he's not capable of what? Umantinin Lo, and if they say, in other words, he didn't get any moccasins yet, right? So what should they do? And they determine that he is capable of getting 40, right? So Mantinan Lo, and in that particular case, they wait, Ad Shiyavri, until he gets better. In other words, he's healed from the Bacchus. V'yu'omdimoso omid horo'ilo. And then they'll determine the correct amount that he deserves. V'chein omdu techilot liyud ches. And likewise, in the case of, let's say, at first they said 18, and v'l'bayom chosgu v'yom neshur v'kabil ha'boyim, and, you know, the very same day they changed their mind, said he could get 40, so iglai milso, then it's revealed to us, in other words, it's apparent, it's obvious, that Torah ba'ol midrishon, that they made a mistake with the first estimation, v'yenu klum, and it's no good. V'yil kachem loko klor, right, so if he has already received kol hashmoneh esrei, the entire 18 makas, then patron I say, then in that case he's free, he doesn't have to suffer anymore. The kaven, the yotz v'bezdin for nisayon, he's already received, you know, the shame, he's already endured the shame of being given by vizyon bezdin, right, of being punished by the bezdin. Ulahach zero. So it's in order to make him, you know, to change his way of life. But what if he didn't, you know, get Malkus's yet? Then they can add, if they want to, at a later time, as long as he didn't get it. Why? For the simple reason, they didn't clone, because it's, they said, you know, it's the first estimate, and so it doesn't count. That's all. Hi.
The library is locked up.
Oh, fine. Okay. You put the key back. Good.
Put the key back, so we're all set. So you know that end is secure.
Very good. Okay. All right. Thank you, Al. Yeah. Have a good night. Okay. Anyway, let's go on a little bit more.
All right.
Take the next Mishnah over there. All right. Mishnah says, Ovar Avera, Sheyesh Bo Shnei Lavin, right? Let's say that he committed a transgression, which actually was, you know, involved simultaneously transgressing two lavim. You know, like we had cases before, right? So, amduhu oimed echod. So, they give him one total of how much they feel that he can get, right? So, in that case, loke potter. If he gets the amount of makas that they said he should be getting, then he's potter. That's all he doesn't get. The yim lav. Then, if he did not get the malchus, then loike misrabi, he gets malchus, right? And then he gets healed, the chos of a loike, and then he has to have malchus all over again. So, the Gemara wants to know, it says, Rohatanya, didn't we learn that ain't omdin omit echol ishtay lavin? Didn't we have somebody who says that you're not allowed to make one estimate for violation of two lavin? Some are Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, "Loi kashya." It's not a kashya. He says, "No difficulty." Because, "Ho damduhu liyarboim b'chado, ho damduhu liyarboim b'tarte." In one case, we could say that, let's say they estimated that he should get 41 strokes. Does that make sense?
No,
it doesn't make sense. Why not?
Number divided by three.
No, number divided by three. Exactly. Okay. So in that particular case, what should we say? According to this particular
42.
Right? So we should say, no, not that we'll give him one more.
But that would make a division of luxury.
Okay. What we should say is simply that. Throw out the original one, give him 40 now, and then after he gets better,
give him 40 more.
Give him another 40. Okay.
Not 30.
But but let's say they said 42, then in that particular case, given the 42, and Fatik, he doesn't have to undergo it again.
42.
Because why? The 42 represents actually two different estimates. It's 39 for one, and 3 for the other lav. So they don't have to give him 39 plus 39 for at the same time, you understand? But they simply give him 39 plus an additional 3, and without these, somebody yanks him. He doesn't have to do anymore. Okay.
Crazy. Yeah. Easy going guy.
Yeah, right. So you have to have a heart, too.
There we go. Rough on it.
Right. Okay, we'll go a little bit further. The next Mishnah wants to know about the actual. What are they doing? It says, Kates of Malkin or so. How do they actually inflict the Malkus on him? So first of all, they say kofish te yodov al ha'omud heloch the heloch. What they do is that they have, literally like a stand, or whatever you want to call it. A post, I guess, is a better translation, right? All right. Huh? A column, yeah. But I'm trying to think in terms of, you know, okay, something we can understand. All right. So let's say a post, a column, you name it, all right? And they tie his hands to it on both sides. Helich to helich means on one side and on the other side, okay? All right. I'm not finished yet. The Chazan HaKnesses, and then the Chazan in the Shul. In those days, however, the word Chazan had a different connotation. It means the guy who's in charge of seeing that things run in the Shul, okay? Mm-hmm. So what did he do? He Ochez Bivgadav. He grabs hold of the garment of this guy. So, Im Nikru'u Nikru'u. If the garments are torn, so they're torn. The Im Nifrimu, Nifrimu. And if they are ripped, then they are ripped.
What's the difference?
What's the difference? Okay.
Between torn and ripped.
Yeah, okay, it's a good question. According to Rashi, the ripping part is done by tearing the seams. Okay, whereas the other one, the ikru, you know, the tear, that would be any place in the garment itself that it tears, okay? So, at any rate, he, you know, he grabs him and he pulls it and he rips, you know, his shirt, right? Achum negala es libay, until he literally reveals his heart. Of course, it doesn't mean his heart, it means his chest, all right? In other words, he, you know, is stripped to his waist, okay? Ushtei yodos melacharav, and his two hands are tied behind him. The yena maka oso, and he doesn't administer. Whoa, hold it, hold it.
Yeah,
my eye.
You
want down
the, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. Whoa, pardon me. The Oheven is on the Acharov. And behind them they pay a stone. The stone is probably in order to show that, you know, he should have gotten stoning, maybe.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's symbolic that maybe he should have gotten skiller, but, you know, he's not getting skiller, he's only getting markers, okay? This is my interpretation of it, okay? Chazan HaKnesses, Omed Olav, right, so he stands right next to him, literally above him. I guess you could say literally above him, because the guy is bent over on the post with his hands tied behind him, right? So, Ritzua Biyodo, and he has a strap in his hand, and what is this Ritzua made of? So he says, Shel Egel, it's made out of, well, we could say like cowhide, right? Okay? Bullhide, cowhide, whatever you want to say, okay? Kifula, which is bent double, in other words, it's folded double. Yeah. Echod l'shnayim, in other words, one which is bent over, which is folded over to two, and then again ushnayim the arba, and the two are now bent, are now folded over so that they make four. Ushtei ritzuos, and added to it are another two straps, shel chamor, of a donkey. Again, the marginal notes do not have the word shel chamor. But the Gemara is going to mention that it is. Okay? And the straps is oilos for your day's bro. That is, the second set of straps go up and down within the original strap. In other words, they're all like bound together. Okay? Even though they're from two separate straps, but the two of them are intertwined so that they work together. Okay? Mezonish Badafa.
No.
Okay. So, we're not finished yet. Okay. Okay. Yodo, which means literally the handle of the strap, is tefa. It's a hand's breadth in thickness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or maybe in height or something like that. Because probably it means in height in this case, because the next word says, v'rochbo tefa. And, you know, the thickness, literally the width, is also a hand's breadth. The rosha, and literally the head or the tip of the strap, magas al pikreso, reaches his navel. In other words, it should be long enough that, let's say, if they had it on the ground, then it would come up to where his belly was. Okay. 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 Umake oise shlish melfonovish te yodis melachlov. And he whips him one third in front and two thirds, this is what yodos over here means, two thirds on his back. The yena, literally behind him, right? The yena mako ese, and he does not whip him, loy omeid velo yoshev, neither in a standing position nor in a sitting position, elamuta, but rather he has to be bent over. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, vehipi lo hashofet, right? That the judge has to cause him to be, literally to fall, but it means to be bent over. Vehamake, make biyode achas, and the person who is doing the administering the makas has to do it with one hand, the chol koyche, with
all his
whatever
mind.
Strength he has. Let's ask him a good shmeis, okay. Kore, somebody else is there who's calling out the number of strokes, right? Mm. But how does he do it? He doesn't say 1, 2, 3, 4. Instead, he reads a pasuk. Kore, he reads, and they give this pasuk. Imlo sishmor lasos. It's called the Brea Torah, the Suah, and so on and so forth, which is a pasuk in the Teichacha and has 13 words in it, okay? Or other psukim that have 3 words. For example, right? The Hifla, the Shem Esmakir Secho, the Esmakir Zarecha, and so on. The Rabbeinu Shalom will literally make known what your makos are and also the makos of your seed, etc., etc., also from the Teichacha. And the Chosel at Chilas HaMikra, and then after he's gone through the 13 words and he still has to go over a second time, so he goes over to the beginning of the pasuk and he says it over again if necessary, right? And then he says Ushmatim is Divrei HaBis HaZos, you are to observe the words of this covenant and so on. Okay, the Chosel, and then he concludes with what? The Hurachum Yechap Yevotim. Others say, incidentally, that the pasuk that they use is the Hurachum, because if you count how many words around the Hurachum, you'll also find
13.
Okay. The Chozer, the Tchilat HaMikra, and he goes back to the beginning of the pasuk. In other words, once he said Hurachum once through, so he goes over again if he has to, and goes over again. Okay. The Immeis, Tachas Yodo, Potter. Now, what would happen if the man died as a result of the markets, you know, while he was beating
him?
So in that case, potter, which means that, means that the person who administered the markets will not be punished for it. He was only executing, in other words,
the
command of the best things, okay? But what if Hosef lo odr to achas, what if he added one more belt, literally, right? Well, in other words, he gave him one more than he was supposed to. Bormais, and the man died. This is already a different story. Then Hareza Goyla Al Yoda. Then in that case, the person who is giving the Marcus has to go into Golas, because now he is adjudged as guilty of manslaughter, as we learned in the first prokem, right? Yes.
With Suat, does it refer to the strap?
Literally, with Suat, but in this case, it really means one more stripe. In other words, one more marker, okay? How is the Golal Yod? Niskalkel?
What does that mean?
What? Niskalkel? It means that the man literally became...
He makes a
Yeah, that's correct. Niskalkel. An accident happened to him, okay? Bein berei, bein b'mayim. Whether it is with feces or with urine, then potter. Then in that particular case, that's it. He's already been disgraced, and so therefore, he doesn't get any more markets. But good old Rabbi Yehuda comes along. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and
he's
says,
a tough guy.
Well, ish berei, if a man has a bowel movement, right, disgraces himself that way, then in that case, he's potter. But not if he simply what? Urinates.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of the markets. But for Isha, for Mayan, if it is a woman who is receiving markets, if she, urinates as a result, then in that case, that's it. She's finished. Okay. All right. So we shall close at this particular point. Next week in Yitzhak Hashem, we'll do a little bit more of the Rashi that we didn't do tonight, and then we'll walk the Chav Gimel.
No, it'll be a Chav Beis.
Chav Beis.
I'm a Beis.
Right. Take a look. We have Chav Gimel.
And
Chav Dalet.
That's it.
The best is yet to come.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Seems to me that while I'm listening, that the crime doesn't fit the punishment.
Well, you may feel that the punishment is more severe than the crime. Is that what you're thinking?
Like we're talking about disciplining a child, and you're going to punish him on the same level?
No. They're only using a posik in order to show you that, you know, there is such a thing that you can discipline a child. Okay. But it doesn't mean that you give him 39 stripes. Kos v'sholom. That would be a misinterpretation, which they had no intention of doing. Okay. It's just, you know, it says, you know, ma makos ha'elam, right? What are these makos, right? In your hands, between your eyes. And so the answer is, you know, I received them base mahabai, right? In the hands of those who love me. So in other words, by receiving the punishment and admitting, you know, that he did wrong, so in that particular case, he realizes that it's being done by those who love him. It's an act of love and it's not an act of hatred. So that's the interpretation. And even Rabbi Yehuda, who says he should get 40, it's in order to make him realize that he should mend his ways and, you know, be a better person, and that they're really doing it out of love to him and not, you know, out of some sadistic desire to punish him. Okay.
Repeat it.
Okay,
I got to be recorded for posterity.
Yeah.
The Mishnah says, Ketzal Balkinoisa, right? How do we administer makas to him? So, Koifesh Tayodov, they bind both of his hands, Al Ha'omud, to the pillar, Halef and Halef, one on each side. And then the Chazan Akneses, and, you know, count the bloom. Oichet Bivgodov, in other words, actually, we would have to say the shul administrator.
Okay.
It can't be Rhoda, though. It wouldn't fit the bill either. The shul administrator, okay, grabs him by the garments, grabs his garments, and then fashtetzach, he pulls. And what happens? Im nikra'u, nikra'u. If the garment is torn, it's torn. Im nifremu, nifremu. And if they are nifremu, so it's nifremu. The only question is, what is nifremu? Nifremu, as we'll see in a second, Rashi teaches that it means that the seams get ripped. The other one would be a tear, not necessarily on the seam, and this means that, you know, the seam itself is ripped.
So what's dashkushura? You figure that one out yet?
Where?
Subject of laws and... Nifrimo.
Yeah, Nifrimo, yeah. So, him Nifrimo, yeah.
Did you connect on the laws there?
I don't understand. What laws are we talking
about?
Rashi, Nifrimo. Oh, well, so let's take a look.
Oh, okay.
Lamazen. All right, so first of all, it says Al Ha'omud. So, Rashi now wants to describe what exactly is this Omud, you know, this pillar. So, he says it's Eitzachod, a piece of wood. A beam, if you wish. No, it's bekarka, which is pushed into the ground. Vigavoa, and it is high, kenegetzte amos, o amavachetzi. And it's about either 2 cubits, which would be roughly, what, about 3 feet high, or amavachetzi, which would be, let's say, maybe about 2.5 feet, or something like that. Of course, the problem is always what exactly is an amav. We figure out that an arm is usually about 18 inches, but there are those who say that an arm is actually 24 inches.
Mm.
So since it varies, you know, so it would be somewhere in the neighborhood between, let's say, 2.5 to 3.5 feet or something like that height. The hu kafuf, and he, meaning, of course, the guy, the man who's going to get the malchus, is bent over, umbuta, and he leans over alusa homut, right, on that. It's not really a pillar in the sense like a stone pillar.
Right,
it's a wooden pillar, right.
Right,
yeah. Ke'odam ha'nismach abriach delis. It's like a man, he says, who is leaning on the bar to the door. The tailor yodav lamato, and what does he do? He lets his hands fall down, literally he hangs them down low. The kofsim lo yodov, and they tie up his hands, the tzidei ha'amad, on the sides of the pillar.
Right.
And then the chazan. So who is the chazan? So he says, Shamash HaKohol. He says, he is, you know, the man, right, who serves the congregation. In other words, he's a man who, I call him administrator before, but whatever he does, I mean, he does in order to do the job on behalf of the congregation, on behalf of the community. And he says, well, Oshamati Boshimashmos. But Rashi says, I don't know why Dafkin has to be this guy. I have no special meaning. I have no special reading, you know, for it.
Well,
why it is like
the
this?
Word, or why the word implies Shamish Kahal?
Yeah, but that itself doesn't mean anything. Because Shamish, for one thing, in the time of the Gemara, usually means a servant. I mean, if you have, for example, when we learned the brachas over there, how, you know, for example, if people are sitting down, you know, to a meal and they have the bench and the shamash oymed aleihem, right? In other words, the person who's serving the meal to them, the servant. So the word shamash can mean that, you see. It's more like a servant. So all the shamash means to
serve.
To serve, right. Okay. But why Dafkin has to be this man, so this Rashi says, I don't really know why it has to be he, but whatever it is. Well, so I would say simply that he is the man who is delegated in order to do the job, that's all. Within this sense. Okay?
Nifrimu.
Now, the question is, what is Nifrimu?
Nifrimu.
So Nifrimu, he says, Des Kosrir. Now, I think, again, you know, I'm trying to figure out in my own French what this is. It's not a common word. Okay.
It's a French word.
It's a French word, right. The D-E-S is like D-I-S in English, okay?
Yes,
that's so that itself, that we can already understand, okay? The other part of the word, as I look upon it, it seems that's probably related to the word couture, coudre in French, the verb which means, you know, to sew. So that this couture probably means that you undo what has been sewn. In other words, the closest thing we could say is, you know, that right, he rips, you know, the seams over there. So that's about the best translation that we have, okay? All right, now to continue again with the Mishnah. So, either he tears them or he rips them, okay? Atu Megales Libay, until he reveals literally his heart, which means, in other words, that, you know, he rips the garment so that now he's bare-chested, okay? V'ho'evan nesuna me'acharav. And there is a stone which is placed behind the person who is going to be getting the malchus. And chazanak neses, I added over here the word and, but this is what the understanding is. Chazanak neses omeid alav, the man who we said is going to do the beating, he stands on the stone. Why does he stand on the stone? In other words, he should be higher up so that he could give more zest, you know, when it comes down. Okay? Uritsua biyodo. And he has a strap in his hand. Shel eagle. Eagle is, of course, a calf. In other words, this would be a calf's hide strap. Okay? Kifulon. And it is doubled up, echod l'shnayim, l'shnayim l'yabod. So the obvious meaning over here would seem to be that one strap, but this strap is folded into two, and then the two straps are folded into four. This is one explanation. The only problem that we have over here is, frankly, that we'll see in the Gemara as we continue on the next page, that in reality they use two straps. So that maybe the meaning over here is, you know, that to the other shalego kifulo, it means that, you know, you have a double strap of cat's hide, and each one is folded over into two, so that now you have four. Well, as I say, this is only supposition, but the simplest translation is the first one that we gave. Others say, that there's only one of this one folded over in four, and then the next time it says Ushtei Ritzuyah Shel Chamor Olos V'Yodos Bo, which means that there are two straps of donkey hide that go up and down within it. Okay, in other words, the strap made of the yegel of the calf, right, the calf's hide or cow's hide, whatever, but it really means calf, okay, yeah, is tied together with the those of the strands made of the donkey, and they go up and down. In other words, they're intertwined over there. Yodo tepach. There is a handle, which is a hand's breadth in size. That's, you know, how high it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And urechovo tepach. And also the width of the strap itself, or the width of the straps, is a tepach. It's also, it winds up, it's thicker because when you fold it over, you know, you make it wide, so it becomes, it's a hand breadth in size. Varosho magas hapik reso. And the head or the tip of the strap reaches to the stomach of the person who is being whipped. All right, back to the Rashi for a few minutes. All right, Me'acharav. He says behind him. Who's behind him? So the answer is Me'acharav shel nidon. It's behind the person who has been condemned, you know, to receive the makas. In other words, this is for the benefit. Who stands on the stone? The answer is that Chazal HaKnesses who stands upon it. Okay. Now, Kefula Achas L'Shtayim. So he says, there is one strap which is doubled into two. V'yod Ritzua Acheres. And there's another strap, he says, which is Kefula L'Shtayim, which is also doubled in two. Hainu Shtayim Ritzua Shehin Arba. So that gives us two straps that now make four. In other words, instead of taking one strap and doubling it and then redoubling it, it is actually two straps which are both doubled, so that as a result we now have four. The osan hashtei ritzuos, and those two straps, he says, oilois v'yordes bo, they go up and down. Kolomer, in other words, he says, osan hashtei ritzuos hayutlois be'emsa haritzua. Those two straps were hanging in the middle of the original Ritzua. So in other words, what do we get the picture now from the Mishnah? There are actually, the man holds in his hand three straps, okay? One of them is the cow, the eagle, you know, the calf, right? Calf hide.
Right.
And the other two, as we said, are the chamor, okay, of the donkey. All right.
Well, I thought that you said it was wrapped around.
Yeah, but you know, it means they go them. All those fiordas. They go up and down. In other words, the entire length. We have the entire length of the strap. You know, you have those three, okay, and they are doubled in order to give more schmeissing power. Okay. Right. Okay, so Hoyatulius for M. Sorry, Michelle Chamor. And, you know, in other words, the other two.